Morning will be in Matthew chapter 9, starting at verse 18. We started this sermon series out of the heels of looking at the Sermon on the Mount and looking at Jesus, all the great teaching he gave us, and then seeing how, right off the heels of that, what did he do? What were the first things that he tried to accomplish? How did he serve in many ways? And so how did he walk all that talk that he had done while he was preaching on the side of that mountain? And it's kind of interesting to me, but right after that, if you look at the beginning of chapter 8, right after he comes off the mountain, he kind of really shows how what kind of authority that he has. Remember, the end of chapter 7 talks about how the people were kind of amazed at him because he had so much authority, they didn't know what to do with it. And so not only was he able to teach with authority, he was able to actually heal people. And so right after the Sermon on the Mount, there's three specific examples of healing that Jesus did. And then we talked a little bit more about some other things that he did. This week, we're looking at Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 18, and we're going to see three more episodes, if you will, instances of healing that he did. And so it's kind of a nice little bookend to talk about what he did immediately after the Sermon on the Mount. We saw right at the beginning, Jesus not only speaks words, right, all the words that he spoke on the mountain that stirred hearts, but his actions propelled people into motion. Not only did he propel people into motion, he bids all of us to follow him, follow his direction exclusively. Jesus not only bids us to follow him, he proves his worth through miraculous power. And not only is he worth following, he reminds us that following will cost us everything. And then this morning, I want us to see, looking at these three instances of miracles, of healing that Jesus did, I want us to see that not only does Jesus require everything, but his actions speak loudly of his dominion. Kind of right at the beginning, that we started with his actions that he first put into action, and here we are wrapping it up again with his actions. And this time we're going to see that his actions speak loudly of his dominion. As we look at Matthew chapter 9, starting in verse 18, I pray that you would follow along with me. It says, "While he was saying these things to them, behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, 'My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live.' And Jesus rose and followed him with his disciples. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she had said to herself, 'If I only touch his garment, I will be made well.' Jesus turned, and seeing her, he said, 'Take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well.' And instantly the woman was made well. And when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion, he said, 'Go away, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping.' And they laughed at him. But when the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went through all the district. And as Jesus passed on from there, two blind men followed him, saying aloud, 'Have mercy on us, Son of David.' When he entered the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus said to them, 'Do you believe that I am able to do this?' They said to him, 'Yes, Lord.' Then he touched their eyes, saying, 'According to your faith, be it done to you.' And their eyes were opened, and Jesus sternly warned them, 'See that no one knows about it.' But they went away and spread his fame through all that district. And as they were going away, behold, a demon-oppressed man who was mute was brought to him. And when the demon had been cast out, the mute man spoke. And the crowds marveled, saying, 'Never was anything like this seen in Israel.' But the Pharisees said, 'He casts out demons by the prince of demons.'" Pray with me. Father, we want to hear from you this morning. Lord, I thank you for this word that was preserved these many thousands of years through manuscripts and tucked away corners of the globe. You kept this word alive, able for us to hear. I pray, Lord, that you would help us to consume the thoughts, the literally your breath that you've breathed out through these words. I pray that we would consume them, we would be changed by them, we would apply them to our heart and put them into practice in our lives. I pray, Lord, that we would be encouraged as we walk and that we might be encouraging to others through the miraculous power that you have. I pray also, Lord, that this morning would be a morning, would be the day that we would follow you and recognize that every day with you is better than any other day that we could imagine. And I pray, Lord, that we would trust completely in your word this morning. It's in the name of your Son, Jesus, we pray. Amen. When I look at these three stories, when I look at these three instances of Jesus doing work, the job that he had, I pick up on a couple of different things. The way that it reads, I don't know if I did it justice or not, but the way that it reads is kind of like an action flick. You notice here in the pages, as Matthew is trying to recount what happened to the people and what Jesus was actually doing, he's using these keywords to get us thinking about what it is. Now, I will tell you that every single one of these stories is repeated in another gospel, in the gospel account of Mark and the gospel account of Luke. And they're repeated there. And Matthew, by and large, gives a shorter version of almost every one of these stories. The other gospel authors will add a little bit more detail that Matthew leaves out. And I don't want to necessarily pay too much attention to what's happening in other gospel accounts. I want to see what Matthew's trying to tell us today. Notice in verse 18, he says, while he was saying these things to them. You read something like that, it's like, hey, right here, we're picking up where we left off, you know. Just how many of you guys are Star Wars fans? You know, Star Wars should be exciting, right? But I think it's later this month that the Han Solo project comes out. I'm always excited about Star Wars when they come out. You know why? Because it starts with that, I can't do music, but it starts out with that big crescendo, and then what do you see? The words go skating across the screen to give us the backstory of what we've missed or what we picked up or what we should remember, the important things. It's just a couple of sentences, a few paragraphs at most, to remind us of what we should be thinking about as we dive into this story. And so here Mark uses the same kind of thoughts, the same kind of words to get you thinking about what is he wanting us to know, what is important. And he's giving us these action words while he was saying these things to him. Behold, the ruler came in. A ruler's moving in and wanting to do this. Now, where is Jesus? What is he doing? Who is he talking to? You know, he's leaving us clues to be reminded of what we learned about in the previous passages, right? Remember, he had called Matthew to be his disciple. Matthew left the tax booth, the toll booth that he was manning, left that, and then what did he do? He invited all of his rowdy friends over to a party so that Jesus could meet them and that they could learn about salvation. They could hear about the truth. And it says, while he was saying these things, as the John's disciples, remember, came and asked them that question about fasting, while he was having that conversation, this ruler came in, this leader among the Jews and among the Romans came in to ask for Jesus' help in healing. He was talking to John's disciples. He was talking to the Pharisees. He was talking to the people that was at this party. And he's interrupted by this ruler. When notice in verse 20, he's leaving with his disciples. And behold, a woman who has suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years comes up from behind and just touches the fringe of his garment. For she knows in her heart, if I only just touch his garment, I will be made well. Remember, the ruler said, hey, come, I need you to heal or to raise my daughter who has died. I need you to take care of her. And he's moving quickly to go, but this woman is just in the crowd and just knows, if I can just touch his garment, then I will be healed. And he feels it. Another gospel writer says that he feels power leaving him when the woman is healed. And so he turns around and talks to her. He's in the middle of doing something, and all of a sudden he turns his attention to her, gives her his undivided attention. Instantly, it says in verse 22, instantly the woman was made well. Instantly, it happened so quickly. From the moment that she touched him, she was made well. And then in verse 27, it says Jesus is leaving and he's passing on from there. Two blind men are following him. And then he says when he entered the house, which house is he entering? Is he entering his house, his friend's house? I think he's going back to Matthew's house. He was at the party. He got interrupted. He went and healed this girl, raised her from the dead. We'll get into that in just a minute. But now he's going back. He wants to be a gracious guest and be back and finish up the party. He's going back there. He's getting involved with them. He's talking. He's healing them. And the word is spreading. And then it says, notice in verse 32, as they were going away, as the blind men were leaving, right, somebody else was coming in. Some friends brought this demon-oppressed man to him. We don't know who the people are that brought him, but nonetheless, here he is, and he can't speak. He's mute. And then the demon has been cast out, and the crowds are marveling. Jesus is actually putting into this action movie. You know, if we were kind of maybe going to turn this into a movie, and we'd have a lot of flash cuts and things like that. It'd be like Ocean's 11 or something like that, where it's one thing's happened right on the top of the next. You know, you got to keep up with this story. And so I want us to keep up with this story. I want us to see three major things from these stories, because I think they're all connected. Because it starts when he's at that party that Matthew had thrown. And his attention is being pulled away, and he's going to do other things. But then he ends up back at that party speaking to those same Pharisees. And we'll get into that in just a moment. But these three things I want us to see can be found here in the scripture. The first thing I want us to see is that nothing speaks louder than a confession of faith. Nothing speaks louder than a confession of faith. In verse 18, the ruler says, "My daughter has died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live." He confesses Jesus' ability to raise this dead girl from the grave. "My daughter has died, but you can make her live again," is what he says. Verse 21, the woman has been bleeding for 12 years, had a discharge. But she says to herself, "If only I touch his garments, I will be made well." She had faith that all she needed to do was just touch the hem, the fringe of his garment, and she would be made well. Verse 27, the blind men cry out, calling him Son of David. You see, this is the first time that he's been referred to as the Son of David since back at the genealogy when they talked about him being a descendant of David. But here, these two blind men, they can't see anything. They don't know, you know, right from left or black from white or, you know, up from down, but they know who the Son of David is because they have faith. They know that this Jesus is the one that had been promised. This Jesus is the one, the Messiah that they're looking for. And then he actually says, "Do you believe that I can do this?" And their confession is, "Yes, Lord, I do believe." The mute man in verse 32 was brought to them. Whoever brought this demon-possessed man to them had faith that Jesus could do something about it. We don't necessarily have all the exchange of who said and who was there. Was it his parents? Was it his friends? Who? We don't know. But nonetheless, the man is standing in front of Jesus for one reason and one reason only. Because whoever brought him there believed that what Jesus could do was more powerful than what the demon was accomplishing. Nothing speaks louder than a confession of faith. You see, we look at the daughter who has died, and we see that, you know, parents, they're not supposed to bury children. It's the other way around. We obviously know that that's not always true. But as parents think about their children and being sick, and this poor father is preparing even now to bury his daughter, he says to him, "I know who can fix this." Jesus rose and followed him right away. This woman who has been bleeding for 12 years, this bleeding makes us ceremonially unclean. But she said to herself, I know who can restore me. Remember, when you have a discharge of blood, it's back in Leviticus chapter 15, it talks about this. It talks about both women during their menstrual cycles, but also two men who are also bleeding, who have some sort of wound or something like that. They're also unclean. So anytime someone has a discharge of blood, they're not welcome to come in until the discharge is into the temple. They're not welcome to come and make their sacrifice because they're unclean. And until that problem can be taken care of, they're not able to come into the temple. What would that have been like for 12 years, for wanting to be there, to wanting to be included in the rest of worship, in the rest of the people that are worshiping, but not being able to because of this thing that could not be fixed? She'd been bleeding for these 12 years, but she knows who can restore her. And she goes to find him. And listen to his response. It says, take heart in verse 22. Take heart, daughter. Your faith has made you well. You see, she actually went to him. And it was her faith, that confession of faith that she had in her heart and in her actions that made her well. Knowing that all she needed to do was just touch Jesus. The blindness, makes us dependent on everyone, right? Most blindness is something that we can live with, but you're very dependent on the people that are around you. You need to trust those that are leading you and that are helping you and taking care of you. There's all kinds of different issues that can happen when you just can't see, right? You could be confused about how much something costs. Just imagine not being able to read bills or to read correspondence from your long-lost relative or whatever it might be. I mean, the list could go on and on. It makes you dependent on everyone. But these men knew who could free them, knew who could give them that freedom, that independence. And Jesus says, according to your faith, be it done to you. The demon that was oppressing this man is all about destruction. Wouldn't even let him speak. He was completely mute. And these people that brought this man to Jesus knew who could save him. The demon had to be cast out. Nothing speaks louder than a confession of faith. As we speak our truth about who Jesus is, our understanding what he has done and how he has made us well, we can speak that truth. Nothing is louder than that. Have you ever argued with someone about your faith and about what you believe and all that? And they'll come at you with all these philosophical arguments or scientific knowledge or whatever it is, and they might be able to tell you how gravity works and how thermodynamics and all these different things, right? And they'll be able to explain these apologetic type things to confuse us with logic or to trip us up with reason or whatever it might be, and it turns into this cat and mouse game. And sometimes you can argue with someone like that and it just goes and goes in a circle and no one ever gets anywhere. But what can they not take from you? What you've experienced and what you've seen. And as you speak the truth of what you know and what you've seen and what you've heard, no one can take that from you. And as you speak that, as you tell people what Jesus has done for you, what he has meant to you, what you hear from him and the words that have been preserved for so many years, they can't take that away from you because nothing speaks louder than the confession of faith that you have. The second thing I want us to see from these passages is that Jesus' hands speak louder than death, than blood, than blindness, and than demons. His hands speak louder than that. What did Jesus have to do? When the girl was laying dead on her bed, he went down and he took her by the hand and woke her up. Just like I try to do with Emerson on school mornings, which never turns out well. You got to shake her and just, throwing water on her. Parker does really great. He just wakes up right away. Sometimes I just have to step into the room. But Emerson, I mean, but Jesus didn't have to do any of that. He just reached down. He took her by the hand and said, rise, child. And up she arose. the woman who had been bleeding, what did it take? She just had to touch just the fringe. Didn't even have to touch him. If I could just touch the tassels that are hanging from his garment, if I could just hold, just touch it for a moment, that's all that would need to be done. The blind men, once they had made their confession of faith, what did Jesus do? He touched their eyes. And he touched their eyes, and instantly they could see. They were opened. We don't know exactly what happened with the demon-possessed man, but we know that even he's in previous examples, he's just cast them out by a word. He said, go, and they were cast out. He didn't even need to touch their hands, and he cast out demons of before. But nonetheless, Jesus has power over life. Jesus has power over death. Jesus has power over sickness. Jesus has power over health. Jesus has power over all things in this world. Colossians chapter 1 says that Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. For he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, and that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. There is nothing that Jesus cannot do. There is no distance that you could find yourself from his love and from his grace and from his mercy that he cannot travel. There is no sinfulness in your own heart and in your own life that would keep you separate from him. There is no wall that you could build up. There is no affliction that someone could cast upon you, no oppression that someone could hold you underneath in their thumb that Jesus couldn't overcome. When we hear the psalmist talking about my Lord, my God, my rock, and my salvation, Jesus is there. Jesus is part of that, to be that rock for us, to be that firm foundation that our lives are built upon. Jesus' hands speak louder than any other thing in this world, whether it be death, whether it be life, whether it be blood, whether it be healing, whether it be blindness, whether it be sight, whether it be demons or angels. He has power over all things. And in him the fullness of God was meant to dwell, so that you and I might have salvation by the blood on the cross. This is the joy that we come into. We look at how Jesus reached down and took them by the hands, touched their eyes, was just, you know, the power went out of him through the tassels of his garment. Jesus was able to take care of all of those things because he is powerful enough. And what does this all mean? If we know that Jesus is meant to be preeminent in all things, if we know that he has dominion over this entire world, if we know that he has conquered all of these things and that he is looking for a confession of our faith, what does this all mean for us? And what I want to encourage you is this third thing, that your response speaks loudly about your faith. Speaks loudly about your faith. Let's look at how these folks responded in this passage here. Verse 24, when Jesus went to them, or went to the daughter, and inside there were flute players, and there were there was a crowd of mourners. Even this man was a ruler, a man of influence. There were even history tells us that certain people, if they had enough means, could hire professional mourners so that everybody would know how sad I am about my deceased relative. And so he had already, his daughter was dead, and so someone from the family, maybe he himself, we don't know, but someone from the family had invited these flute players, these musicians, and these wailers, these mourners to come and show just how sad we are. And Jesus said to them, he said, go away, for this girl is not dead, but sleeping. And what was their response? They laughed at him. They didn't believe him. They didn't think, maybe let's give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm always a big fan of giving folks the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they just didn't think that Jesus heard the whole story. Maybe he thought that just she really was asleep, and that all these people wailing and moaning and the flute were just us trying to wake her up. You know, maybe she just was in a big sleep, and so that's why everybody was here. You know, maybe they thought it was Emerson, my girl, that can't get up for, you know, to save her life, so to speak. But Jesus here is not necessarily commenting on the fact that she's actually sleeping, but that her death is not a final thing in when he is on the scene. And that if he wanted to, he could wake her up just as if she was sleeping. And so he says, it says here in verse 25, when the crowd had been put outside. Now that sounds so sweet, doesn't it? It sounds like a nice, nice grandma just shooed them out and said, now get out of here. The Greek word there is actually that they were thrown out. That he got them out. He put them outside. Said, y'all get out of here with this craziness. Don't bother us anymore. I've got work to do. And he reached down, took her by the hand, and she arose. And the report of this went through all that district, it says in verse 26. If they were laughing at him in verse 24... just a couple of verses later, they realized where the power lied. They realized who was really in charge of life and death. Verse 30, we see the account of the men who were healed, the two blind men, after their confession that they made. And it says their eyes were open, but Jesus does something very strange at this point. He says, he warns them sternly. You know, I told you that Matthew doesn't always have all of the details. He kind of, his versions are a little bit shorter than some of the other gospel writers. But here he specifically puts that he sternly warned them. He's making some sort of emphasis there. See that no one knows about it. Why is Jesus asking them not to go and tell his story? What do you think? There's all kinds of reasons that come to you, and Matthew doesn't exactly tell us why. But I think that we could see the response of the Pharisees later in this chapter, and we're going to see definitely in the coming chapters how the people responded to him and how they might be confused about his power. Sometimes we see someone that's so great and so powerful, we want to make them just our leader, right? As soon as they do something cool, hey, you're the guy that's in charge. You did that? Hey, let me give you the thing. I remember when I was I only played football for one season in eighth grade, just the only time I played. And I was a lineman, because I was about this, I grew up to be about this size, and that's how I stayed. But I was a lineman, and we were practicing for the field goal team, right? And no one could snap the ball. I couldn't snap the ball to the kicker, to the punter, to anybody. It just, you know, it's a learned, there's only like, 50, you know, there's only 33 guys in the whole world that can do it good. You know, that's, you know, one for every team in the professional, in the National Football League. But nobody could do it. And his coach was trying to show us how to do it and all these different things. And so he kind of stepped away. He was mad. And then someone snapped it and sent it back to the kicker and to the holder, I should say. And the coach turned around at that moment and said, hey, that right there, you got the job. And we all turned and looked at coach and said, coach, that's the punter. He can't be the snapper because he can't punt it to himself. But he's the only one that can actually snap the ball, you know? And so coach was ready to give him the job, right? We often do that. As soon as you can do something cool, well, I'm just going to follow you. I'm going to make you the leader. And here Jesus, I think, is trying to say, you know what? We don't need these bandwagon folks. I want folks that have actual faith. I want them to see these confessions. I'm not here just to be some parlor trick, some circus. I'm looking for true disciples. But what is their response? Verse 31, it says, they went away and spread his fame through all that district. It's kind of an interesting thought, isn't it, that Matthew puts in there? These men had faith, and they confessed that faith, but they didn't have obedience, did they? Kind of interesting how that goes. Matthew doesn't say a whole lot about it, but I think he puts it in there so that you and I might have a thought about it. You and I might say we have faith, and that's great. I'm glad that you do, if you would confess that. But my question for you then is, are you obedient with it? Let's look at what happened with the demon-possessed man. As the demon had been cast out in verse 33, the mute man spoke. Hadn't spoken in who knows how long. We sure don't. But what here is happening? Two responses. The crowds marveled. Remember, Jesus is back in the house where he had been enjoying the party from Matthew. And he's there, and this demon-possessed man was brought. Remember, the two guys left, and then immediately the demon-possessed man is brought to him. And there, he casts out the demon. And then the people that are there, the crowd, and maybe by this time with all the commotion that's been happening, maybe there's a crowd on the outside looking in through the windows. We don't know for sure. But nonetheless, a crowd sees it. And what do they say? Never was anything like this seen in Israel. You see, that's not necessarily a confession of faith, but a recognition of his power, a recognition of his might, a recognition of who he is and what he did. And maybe it's not full faith yet, but at least it's the beginning of that statement. But then again, remember the Pharisees had been hanging out and trying to trip him up with some questions about how he eats with sinners and all of those things. But they're still hanging out, and what is their response? Verse 34, it says, he casts out demons by the prince of demons. They wanted to explain that natural phenomenon, that miracle, by some other means. If they could come up with some sort of scientific reason, if they had known, they might have said that. But even they didn't have the scientific acumen to try to figure that out. They just said, well, you know, obviously he's casting out demons because he is associated with the prince of demons. And so our responses speak loudly about our faith. This morning, I want each of us to think about that. To think about the faith that you have. To think about the way that it's built up or what it's built upon. And I want you guys to ask yourselves, and I'm asking myself this same question. The faith that I have, what am I going to do with it? Am I going to be obedient to what God commands me to do, unlike those two blind men were, no matter how good their intentions were? Or am I going to simply just say, wow, I've never seen anything like this. At least that's amazing. And maybe just stop there. Or notice here, this little forgotten little phrase, all the way back at verse 19, I should say. When the ruler came and said, my daughter has just died. Come, you can heal her. You can make her well. Make her live. Verse 19, it says, Jesus rose, and there's immediacy there. Jesus rose and followed him, right? The guy said, come on, and Jesus gets up. Now, notice there's this little prepositional phrase right next. What does it say? With his disciples. You know what's kind of interesting? You know who's included in that? Matthew, right? Because remember what we learned about last week? That Jesus stood before Matthew and said, come and follow me. And Matthew threw down his tax bags and his rolls and all those different things and said, you can have it. And he started to follow Jesus. And he said, not only did he start to follow Jesus, he said, look, I'm going to invite my friends and we can have this party. And Jesus, you can speak to all these people and they can know the truth. How awesome is that, that Matthew got to be included in this story? That his response was, I'm going to follow Jesus and I'm going to do whatever he wants me to do. Friends, I hope that that is our response. I hope that is my response. I hope that is your response. That we might have true faith. That we might see that Jesus truly is worth following and that he has miraculous powers and all those things that we've been learning. But I pray that we would recognize his dominion over this world and that we would serve and follow him completely. Let me ask you to stand. I'm going to invite the band to come back up. And they're going to play through this song one last time. And as they play, necessarily want anyone to step out of the aisle. Because this morning is not a morning about stepping out of the aisle. This morning is about you stepping out of your past, out of the way that you used to be. And this morning, if you look at how you are going to respond to what Jesus has said, my question for each and every one of you is, as the song is playing and we're considering all these things, are we going to scoff at Jesus and laugh and say, hey, that's, you know, we can explain it some other way? Are we going to just say, he's a pretty neat guy and that's nothing I've ever seen before? How awesome is that? Or are we going to have the response of his disciples that they followed him wherever he would go? And this morning, I would ask each and every one of us that would make that decision that we have to respond. At the end of the service, I'm going to be back there shaking hands with everyone. I'd be more than happy to talk with you. But this morning, as the song plays and as you sing along, will you make that commitment to follow Christ? It's up to you this morning that you might make that decision right there where you stand. And I pray that you would. Ben, let's hear it.